Well, by now you would have heard all about the Palaszczuk government's massive, massive announcement on renewable energy and targets. A huge, huge announcement on Wednesday. They're saying they will build the world's biggest pumped hydro here in Queensland. 70% of Queensland's energy supply will come from renewables by 2032. They'll build a Queensland supergrid, a supergrid that will connect solar, wind, battery and hydrogen generators right across the state. 100,000 new jobs, apparently, by 2040, most of those in regional Queensland. The list goes on and on. It's all happening, and it's a $62 billion plan from Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk and her team. No word on how they're going to pay for that, but that is by the by. Look, there's been lots of praise for it, as you can imagine, the last couple of days from from the green sector and climate change advocates and whatnot. I think it's to get a balanced view, a balanced take on this very shiny, very, very big, expensive plan. We're lucky to grab a few minutes with Ian McFarlane. He is the chief executive of the Queensland Resources Council. You can imagine how busy his phone has been since this plan was announced on Wednesday. Ian, welcome to the show, first of all. I guess just your general first impressions of that plan announced by Premier Palaszczuk.
Well, it's a very ambitious plan, and it's one that they'll have to get absolutely right and manage very closely, or Queenslanders will find themselves in the same situation as Europe with blackouts and spiralling high electricity prices. We really need to make sure that this goes ahead smoothly, and there's a lot of practicality in the way it's implemented and no ideology. If we rush it, if we try to cut corners, if we decide that something just should happen rather than can happen, then Queenslanders will pay the price for it, and they'll pay the price in terms of their household electricity bills, but also in terms of their jobs, because industry won't be able to afford high-priced electricity if we're going to be competitive internationally.
QRC put forward some interesting stats at about the same time that the Premier announced that plan on Wednesday. Are you able to run through some of that in terms of the makeup of the electricity market in Queensland?
Well, it's a market that has been traditionally heavily dominated by coal, and that continues to be the case. So coal-fired electricity on a normal sunny day, not like yesterday because it was overcast, but on a normal sunny day, coal will provide 70% of the electricity for Queensland. Then renewables will provide, on a good sunny day where the wind's blowing, around 20%. And then gas makes up the difference. And the interesting thing is that we now see ourselves in a situation where renewables have got to increase substantially, 50% more renewables. And of course, the challenge with renewables, as we all know, is that not every day is a sunny day. And quite often you get overcast, heavy days where the wind doesn't blow either. So storage will be important. There is going to be an enormous amount of money spent transmitting electricity from one end of the state to the other when perhaps it's sunny in Townsville or Cairns and not so in the southern part of the state. Again, you have to get that all right, getting access for those power lines through both environmentally sensitive country but also privately owned country is going to be a real challenge. So there's lots to be done here, and cost is the big question mark.
I mean, let's just focus there on some of those stats. As you said, about 70% of Queensland's power comes from coal at the moment. They want to flip that to 70% renewables by 2032. Ian, that's only 10 years away.
It is 10 years away. Of course, there will still be coal-fired electricity in the grid because a lot of the coal generators are state-owned, as the Premier said yesterday, but 40% are privately owned. And those generators will continue to operate dependent upon what the market and the demand is doing. But the reality is that there are a lot of renewable energy sources that need to be built. And pump hydro is a battery. It doesn't generate any electricity. So whilst there's some big numbers around the electricity that will come from pumped hydro, the reality is you've got to generate that much and more to make up for the losses you have in pumping the water up and releasing it. So there's enormous amount to be built in terms of solar farms, wind farms, and power lines. And in terms of the coal-fired generation, we are going to also be facing a situation where New South Wales will run itself into a critical shortage. We've seen today an announcement by AGL that Victoria will be closing Loy Yang 10 years early. That's going to create enormous problems and pressures on the electricity grid that are already seeing blackouts and rationing of electricity at certain times in Victoria and New South Wales. It is going to be an extraordinary time, and one mistake and it's all going to go to hell pretty quickly. So we need to really manage this very closely and hopefully not make any mistakes.
Such a short time frame. Ian McFarlane, let's talk about jobs then. You are absolutely best placed to, I guess, talk about that transition. Premier Palaszczuk seems fairly confident that there's almost like a jobs guarantee that she's saying 100,000 new jobs by 2040, most of those in regional Queensland. She's saying existing jobs can be transitioned. Is that how it works on the ground?
Well, look, that's going to be incredibly complicated. People are going to have to be reskilled. Someone who looks after a power station can't necessarily or isn't necessarily qualified to put up a solar panel or a wind tower.
Or may not want to move.
I mean, towns that are going to be affected by this, particularly are Billawheela and Gladstone, and we're going to see those older power stations in those regions the first to shut. Places like Millmerran and Cogan Creek, relatively new coal-fired power stations, very efficient. Millmerran's privately owned as well, so you're going to see those power stations stay online much longer. But the transition will need to be managed, and it is going to cause some disruption. The resources industry really doesn't have a dog in that fight, so to speak. We are the miners of the resource. We don't operate the power stations, so... They will need to work very, very carefully on that to make sure people's lives and life savings, for that matter, in terms of the value of their houses, etc., aren't disrupted by this.
And you look at your own role, the role of the QRC. I mean, how do you see that changing over the next, well, let's look at that 10-year horizon?
Well, I mean, for the QRC and for our companies, it's not going to have a very big impact. The reality is Queensland exports 90% of its coal and much... The biggest proportion of that is steel making coal, so metallurgical coal. It's going to continue to be in demand. Yes. The thermal coal, the stuff that's used in power stations, is getting exported all over the world. We are seeing extraordinary prices for that at the moment off the back of the energy crisis that's racking the world, really. It's not just Europe that are feeling the effects of that, but also America. That thermal coal is very much in demand. It's high quality, high thermal value, generates more electricity per CO2 than any other coal in the world, and is relatively free of sulfur and the sorts of problems we see from coal, for instance, from Indonesia. So we'll sell that for many decades to come. We're seeing strong demand across Asia, new power stations being built that are coal-fired. And so for the coal industry, not a lot of change. For the mining industry, the demand for copper will be astronomical. Again, mind-boggling numbers.
Yes.
New power lines, new electric motors, rare earths build the generators the electric engines. Again, good news for the resources sector. But all has to be managed in a context where there is going to be all sorts of unexpected things that happen. No one expected Ukraine. No one expected the changes to the energy market in Europe. So we've got to do that. And, of course, one of the things that's in the plan that people haven't really focused on is Queensland's going to need a lot more gas, because gas is going to play a bigger role than it is now in terms of electricity generation. Where's that gas coming from? We don't know yet. How do we get it to the power stations? That hasn't been worked out yet. There's all sorts of unknowns that we're going to have to work through.
Finally, Ian McFarlane, you've got a global view on so many of these matters. I mean, for context, how does this Queensland plan, this very, very ambitious plan, how does it stack up around the world? I mean, are any other jurisdictions embarking on this sort of incredibly bold, ambitious plan?
Well, the nearest thing I've seen to this, of course, is Germany, who just went hell for leather on renewable energy and built wind farms out in the North Sea, built a lot of onshore wind farms and solar. And of course, Germany is now in a desperate, desperate situation because they still relied on gas, and gas from Russia was cut off. And so that's created massive issues. I mean, in Germany, it's literally a choice between staying warm or keeping factories going. And so I'm guessing factories are going to close. That means job losses. It is a very, very ambitious plan. And to talk about numbers bigger than anywhere else in the world,
yes,
always makes you a bit nervous that one mistake, and Queenslanders will pay for this, both in terms of what they pay for electricity, but also potentially their jobs.
Amazing insights, as always. Very busy time, and as you said, what a fascinating horizon we're in for over the next 10 years and beyond. Ian McFarlane, Chief Executive of the Queensland Resources Council, thanks for your time on The King Review today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.